This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
This is Jason Staples, and you are listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. And today we're going to be looking at the Florida State defense. We're going to be talking about, there's been a lot of injuries. There are some concerns at this point on the defensive side of the ball. We're going to be evaluating some of the things that you might expect to see or that you should expect to see moving forward. And in particular, we're going to spend some time looking at the Florida State secondary. And for that, we're going to be joined by a special guest, former Florida State great and two-time Super Bowl champion Bryant McFadden, who will help fill us in on a few key things about secondary play and where Florida State's been with that and what some possible solutions might be going forward. Obviously, we've had the announcement for sure that Trey Marshall did tear his biceps tendon, and he's out for the year. He's had surgery, and he is unfortunately out for the year. You're talking about a guy who was playing very good football, a guy who had the defense was different with him on the field, and you know, very different once he went off the field. You saw it against Miami. You saw it against in the Louisville game. As soon as Marshall went out with that bicep injury, Louisville was able to take advantage of Florida State on the interior of that defense, getting some coverage looks, some advantageous coverage looks against Tyler Hunter, who has struggled when teams have been able to match their best receiver up against him one-on-one, and winding up having some success. And on the drive that he got hurt, there were two blown coverages by freshman safety Derwin James that resulted in a touchdown. So you can see how important Trey Marshall is to this defense. Actually, Jimbo Fisher in his Monday press conference actually compared losing a safety like Trey Marshall to losing a quarterback on defense because of how much he meant to the defensive secondary in terms of getting guys into the right position and protecting against big plays and providing support against the run and doing so much. So that's obviously a huge loss. And then today we discovered that Tyler Hunter has been held out of the last two practices due to a concussion that was sustained in the Louisville game. So right now, that star position at Florida State, you started with Trey Marshall and Tyler Hunter splitting time at that position. Right now, they're down to the next, you know, we're not even sure exactly who that next guy is going to be. Maybe Derwin James. Jimbo Fisher mentioned that Marcus Lewis, a freshman who missed a lot of time early in the year with a knee injury, a bruise on the bone of the knee, who's been back now, is ready to potentially step on the field and get some time there. Javian Elliott, the walk-on who stepped in for Tyler Hunter, and wound up with an interception, also a key missed tackle, but wound up with a key interception against Louisville. That's an option, and of course, Fisher mentioned that there will be situations where they'll probably move Jalen Ramsey into the star and put maybe a Tavarius McFadden or someone like that at one of the corner positions. So there are some options personnel-wise, but none of them are what you hoped for if you were Florida State coming into this year. And certainly with Nate Andrews still sidelined with his bone bruise and with his knee issue, and also with Terrence Smith, who Fisher confirmed, and it was a quick thing, but he confirmed in the Monday press conference that it was a high ankle sprain, which is something that I'd mentioned previously, that based on the pathology that I saw in how he hurt how he got rolled up on, that it was most likely a high ankle sprain. And high ankle sprains take a lot longer to recover from. I mean, that's a bad deal. You know, it's one thing if you roll your ankle and you just have a bad sprain. It's another if you have a high sprain. Essentially, for those of you who aren't aware of how this works, a high ankle sprain typically results from external rotation. That is the foot turning out. So if you think about twisting your ankle, you're usually thinking about an inversion. So the foot turns in, and you know you stretch the ligaments on the outside of the ankle. A high ankle sprain is the reverse. It usually turns out, and normally it takes getting rolled up on or something like that for that to happen. And it involves then the ligaments, not so much the ATFL, which is the primary ligament on the outside of the ankle. It's not that that's getting stretched, or the CFL. You're not getting those ligaments stretched in the same way that you do, or torn in the same way that you do with a typical ankle sprain. And those can heal or be dealt with a little bit more easily. You're dealing with the ligaments that connect the fibula and the tibia in the lower leg. So those are the two primary bones of the lower leg. The tibia is your shin bone, and the fibula is the smaller bone, the second bone that forms your lower leg. And the bones that hold the ligaments that connect those two bones are the ones that get stretched or torn by high ankle sprains. Now, you can have high ankle sprains that are worse than others, but there's no high ankle sprain that's an easy recovery, and it takes months, not weeks, to get back to full speed and to full strength in the lower leg and the ability to move like you did before the high ankle sprain. And generally speaking, you're talking about a matter of a year with some of the more severe ones. And so we're not exactly sure how severe it is. I mean, apparently it's not as bad as it could have been in terms of a high ankle sprain. It was more on the mild side of a high ankle sprain, which is still worse than just about any regular sprain. But it's going to take a little bit for him to be ready as well. So Florida State right now is still very depleted in that back seven. And it is time, in some sense, for the youth movement to happen. Now, the good thing is these guys are now getting healthy. The young guys that they were hoping would be ready a little bit earlier in the season and miss time are starting to get healthy. And that's actually going to be, I think, one of the themes of the second half of the season is some of Florida State's young players who haven't played as much of a part in the first half of the season are now getting to the point where they're getting ready to be actually put out on the field. That's at wide receiver. That's at running back. That's at defensive back. That's across the board. There are guys who it just takes a little bit of time to get ready to play at this level. And it takes more time. If you think about the guys that Florida State was hoping to get early playing time from in terms of some of the younger players, among the true freshmen, you're talking about wide receiver George Campbell, who had a hamstring injury that cost him almost a month of reps. You have a redshirt freshman, or sophomore, I guess, Pig Harrison, who has had some knee issues that kept him out for some weeks, and he's missed a bunch of reps. You have Auden Tate, the 6'5", 215-pound wide receiver, guy that is going to be a red zone freak. They were hoping he'd be ready right away. He missed about a month with a hand problem. Then in the defensive secondary, the guys you were hoping to get immediate contributions from were Tavaris McFadden and Marcus Lewis, both of whom had some injuries. Marcus Lewis missed a good portion of camp in the early part of the season with a bone bruise in his knee. Tavaris McFadden had a hamstring issue. So these are all guys that you would hope to have gotten on the field a little bit earlier, but they just weren't ready. And that's something that there's been a lot of talk on social media and on message boards and so on to the effect that Florida State just isn't playing their young guys. And how, it can't be any worse. I mean, they should put these guys out there and let them sink or swim. And that's just that's just not the right approach. Part of the problem is that fans only see games. So the assumption is if you're going to give a guy a chance and you're going to find out what you have, you do that in a game. You got to know what you got. You might as well put him out there. You don't know. I mean, he might be better. But the thing is, these coaches see these players every day in practice. So they have a pretty good idea of whether a guy is actually going to be better or whether he's going to be significantly worse. And the truth is that these freshmen will play as soon as they're ready. Jimbo Fisher has shown very clearly that he will not hold back from playing a younger player if that guy is clearly a better upgrade. Is an upgrade over the older guy that's on the field. And I do think we're going to see a little bit more of a youth movement in this second half of the year as some of these young players get a little bit more opportunity. Now, the good thing is that because this has happened, I think, by accident, but because Everett Golson has settled into the offense, because certain things are in place on that side, and you've got some security about how things are around those guys, you can actually handle some of the mistakes that you might get from some of those freshmen a little better now than you could have earlier in the year when there were other moving pieces. not just the youth there. And for our second segment here, we're going to go ahead and lead off then with a little bit of a discussion with Bryant McFadden, former Florida State great at the cornerback position, where we're going to talk a little bit about, we're going to have get his feedback on why it does take a little bit of time for even five-star, even the best five-star freshmen to see the field, and why fans oftentimes don't quite understand, they don't see some of the little things that you have to get right to be able to put those young freshmen on the field. So when we return, we'll be joined by Bryant McFadden, former Florida State great. I'm joined now by former Florida State star and two-time Super Bowl champion, Bryant McFadden. You can, of course, find BMAC together with former teammate Travis Johnson on the FSU Huddlecast podcast, as well as on 120 Sports. Glad to have you with us, BMAC.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Now, Tyler Hunter is obviously a talk of a lot of Florida State fans right now, and that star position and the Florida State secondary after Trey Marshall has gone down, and, you know, Tyler struggled a little bit as teams have found ways to get him matched up with their best receiver in the slot. And there are a lot of fans who called for changes at that position and have talked about, you know, why aren't the freshmen playing and all that. I want to get your perspective first, before we start anything, on what you've seen from Hunter and why he struggled in coverage. So something really quick there.
Well, I think he's playing with bad eyes, first and foremost. 9 times out of 10 as a defensive back, when you're looking in the backfield, you're going to get involved in, and you're going to get put in the wrong position. So your eyes are wrong. That puts you in the wrong position. And also his technique. His technique has been a little off from what I'm seeing. You know, I've been emphasizing some of the things that I've been seeing that he's been doing wrong, which is backpedaling and slow.
Yeah, he's slow pedaling.
You know, you're playing wide receiver. And if I see a wide receiver coming off the line full speed, he's running full speed for a particular reason because he's trying to get behind me. And Tyler has need to grasp that technique yet and understand it. It doesn't make sense for him to backpedal slow when a wide receiver is running as fast as he can potentially run. So you have to speed up your pedal, and that will allow him to be put in better positions than what he's been in so far.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing with that, and it's a little bit frustrating because, again, as a senior, he should be getting that at this point. And that brings us to the second thing. Now, fans who watch an older player get beat or drop a pass or whatever tend to look to the sidelines and say, well, you know, we got a five-star sitting over there who's not getting on the field. But it's not just as simple. It's not as simple as just putting a more talented freshman out there and expecting him to be an improvement. Now, you were the top cornerback in the country coming out of high school, and we're probably about as physically ready to play as anybody could be. I mean, I remember, you know, this summer people were talking about Derwin James benching 405. I remember you doing that at 190 as a true freshman when we first tested. But you didn't get on the field right away. Can you explain to the listeners why the college game is so different and why it takes a while even for a five-star top recruit to be ready to contribute, even at a place like corner where you'd think it's all about physical attributes?
The mental part of the game will be the biggest adjustment for a high school player making that transition to big-time college football. When I first got there, physically I felt like I was ready to go, but mentally I wasn't ready. And if any defensive coordinator feels like he can't trust a guy in the secondary, he's gonna go with a more experienced guy. Now, some of the top recruits that we have there, a guy like Tavares McFadden, got behind the eight ball because of injuries with a hamstring.
Yep.
So remember, he missed a lot of time because he wasn't able to practice.
Same with Lewis.
It's not just about missing time for. Yeah, the same with Lewis. It's not about just missing time athletically. It's about missing the mental reps, not being able to get the mental reps. And fans may want to see these elite players jump on the football field sooner than later. But as a coach, and this is what I really believe Charles Kelly is going with, yeah, he feels like these five-star guys are ready to go. But can I trust them in crucial situations? Because you may get beat every now and again just from the standpoint of not being the most athletic guy on the football field. But one thing coaches will not tolerate are mental mistakes, seeing guys run wide open. We're seeing it on the professional level. Just this past Sunday, you saw Seattle gave up a game-winning touchdown to a wide-open receiver.
Yep.
And those are experienced players. So it happens on either side. But when you know a guy who is young, who may not understand the defense as fully as another guy, you're going to go with the guy that you can trust from the mental standpoint.
Yeah, and that's where you hear fans say, well, it can't be worse than the senior who's struggling. Well, the one thing the senior's doing, he's getting beat, but he's at least in the frame. You get a guy who busts, who's not in the right place, and you got a guy running down the field with nobody around him. And that's what coordinators don't want. So then you get some fans that'll say, well, why can't they just simplify things for a guy like McFadden and just tell him, well, go out there and cover that guy? What's the difference in college ball? It doesn't work that way. You know, you got different releases and so on. Can you explain, like, even in man coverage, how that changes in college? It's different from high school.
Yeah, you can't simplify an entire defense for one individual. That's not going to happen. You probably can do that on Pop Warner or Pee Wee level. For big-time college football, you can't do that because you're running difficult schemes already. So if you have an individual who may not understand what he needs to do when you get into a more complex defense, he's not going to be on the football field, for one. Number two, as a defensive coordinator, I have to understand that all my guys, all 11 guys, understand what's going on. Because some defenses there, when I was there at Florida State, we ran a complex scheme. That's why my transition to Pittsburgh was so easy, because we were running fire zone coverages on the collegiate level.
Right.
And I don't know exactly to the extent that Coach Kelly, may be calling fire zone, but I know one thing, he's calling some nice, aggressive calls. Then you may have a double call called, and depending on the formation, that dictates what call you may call.
Right.
So let's
right.
say if you have a double call, and you can either be playing a number two, cover two, or cover three, depending on the formation. If they come out in a regular formation, which is I formation, two backs, one tight end, I know I'm playing a cover two. But if they come out in a slot set, strong side to the right, two wide receivers on one side with another side tight end to the left, that dictates a cover three. And some young players don't grasp that, especially for guys who missed a lot of time during training camp.
Right, and that's what you see with all these hand signals in the secondary when you see teams adjust their formation or a guy go in motion. They're switching what coverage they're in, and now you got to know what your responsibility is, because if you bust, you've got somebody running free. Now, I know you got to run
exactly.
Here in a second, so one last question. Knowing what you know now, what would you do now that Trey Marshall is out for the year, knowing that you've got some flexible players in the secondary, and what do you expect FSU to do in the secondary based on what you've seen?
Well, what I would do is I would move Jalen Ramsey from the boundary corner to the star. I would put him back at the star because he's our best defensive player, and I want him to be effective. When he's playing corner, he's locked in on a one-on-one concept. But a lot has got to be floating around the line of scrimmage and also use him in the blitz package. Because remember, in 2014, he was a dynamic blitzer coming off the edge. And when he wasn't getting to the quarterback, he was batting balls down at the line of scrimmage. So I would move him to the star. I would bring in one of the younger corners that we haven't seen so far, Lewis or McFadden, and put him into the boundary corner or put him to the field corner, because as you're seeing right now, Marcus White, he's not getting a lot of targets because most quarterbacks can't attack that wide side of the football. That's why we're seeing more targets go to Jalen's side, because that is an easier throw. So I'll move White, who has more experience, put him at the boundary, put one of the younger corners to the field, and let's rock and roll.
All right. Well, I really appreciate it. I know you got to run, but again, my guest has been former FSU great Bryant McFadden. Y'all should follow BMAC on Twitter at BMAC_120. Should definitely subscribe to his Huddlecast podcast together with Travis Johnson, where they spend time each week breaking down what they've seen from FSU out on the field. Thanks so much, BMAC. I still owe you a beating in table shuffleboard. I do want a rematch.
Anytime you're ready.
So a lot of food for thought there in what BMAC had to say in terms of why you don't necessarily see young freshmen. And I can tell you this, Tavarius McFadden isn't going to be more ready to play physically than BMAC was when he came in 2000 with me. I remember going against him my first summer at Florida State. We got there within a couple weeks of each other. And I got my tail kicked every day by BMAC. Now, it took me a while to be able to compete on that level. But he came in ready to do that physically. And at the same time, he's still redshirted. Some of that had to do with he had an injury at one point. But even as a redshirt freshman, he didn't start. And as he mentioned, it's because when you're out there, there's a lot of things that you can do wrong, where especially at corner, especially at safety, when you're in the secondary, You make one mistake, one little mistake, and it's a touchdown. You know, at defensive end or even at linebacker, some of these places, you miss a gap or whatever, and somebody can cover for you. If you're supposed to be in cover three and you're responsible for a deep zone and you think you're in cover two and you just cover the flat as a corner and you get a guy running straight down the sideline for an easy score, that's six. And that you can't get that back. And so when fans talk about, oh, it couldn't be worse. Oh, I assure you it can be worse. Because I've seen worse. And that's, and again, the coaching staff sees worse in practice. And once those guys get there in practice, they'll be there on the field. And actually, you know, this is something on the message boards I've seen. Well, you know, some guys are just gamers. I don't buy that. Yeah, there are some guys who do step it up a level when they're in the game. And you can see, like, they get that extra level of focus. Your Jameis Winston, for example, when the chips were down, Jameis turned his level of play up one more notch. But here's the thing. Jameis Winston was still a really good practice player. You know, Allen Iverson is one of the most obvious to bring up in this case.
We're talking about practice.
We are talking about practice. And, you know, the thing is, Allen Iverson himself, you talk about, you know, he's not a big fan of practice, obviously. And, you know, he'll tell you what really matters at the game. But the thing is, when you get to Allen Iverson's level and you've proven, and this is what he talks about, like, you've seen me play games. You know where I'm, like, how am I going to get better at this point by practicing? You know, how am I going to make my teammates better by practice?
I mean, how silly is that?
And yeah, it would be silly to focus on practice if you're talking about Allen Iverson or Michael Jordan or even Jameis Winston last year, or, you know, Dalvin Cook right now. Dalvin Cook is not practicing a bunch right now because they're trying to rest that hamstring. But the thing is, the thing all those guys do have in common is they're all established, they're proven players. They're all guys who've been there, done that. They've demonstrated that they not only get it, but they can do it at the highest level. You don't need to see it as much from them in practice because you've already seen it in the games. But if you haven't gotten a guy to prove it to you in the game, then you do need it in practice first. What you can't do is say, well, this guy keeps busting coverages and screwing up all the time in practice, but maybe if I just put him in the game, maybe if I just give him a chance in game time, he'll stop doing all the stuff he does in practice. That's unrealistic. That doesn't happen. What you're going to get from that guy is what you see in practice. And that's why it takes a while with these young guys to get them ready. Now, the thing is, Jimbo Fisher and others have said some of these young guys are now at the point where they're getting to where they're trustworthy. And they're going to need to be now. With the situation in the secondary, it's, you know, no time like the present to be ready if you're those guys. Now, I will say this, that I do have a difference of opinion with BMAC and first of all, what I expect Florida State to do, and secondly, what I probably would do myself there. And in some sense, I think they're going to wind up being fairly similar here. And, you know, the primary point of contention here is BMAC's primary solution, his initial solution to this at this point, to Florida State's injuries in the secondary and some of the issues that we've seen in terms of coverage, is to move Jalen Ramsey back to star. And in a lot of ways, that makes a lot of sense because the guy was an unbelievable star last year. He's shown on the highest stage that he can be a playmaker from the star position. Like BMAC mentioned, he's an excellent blitzer. He can do a lot of things to cause problems and be disruptive from that star position while not giving up a lot in coverage. At the same time, I don't actually think that's the best move for a couple reasons. One, number one, is actually Jalen Ramsey doesn't want to make the move. This is his money year. This was the year that all along they were saying, you're going to be our boundary corner this year. So that's number one. You're moving a guy who clearly does not want to make that move. And I'm not saying he's a selfish player. I'm saying, you know, he's established now at boundary corner, and you know, it's not something he wants to do if there are other good options. he'd be willing to do it, but I do think that that's a factor. Secondly, I think, and BMAC alluded to this, teams will target the boundary because quarterbacks, especially college quarterbacks, have an easier time throwing to the short side of the field. Larry Fedora, the coach for North Carolina, gives a good example. He once coached a quarterback who was leading the nation in completion percentage. And it turned out that when they broke the numbers down, 80% of that quarterback's completions were going to the boundary. But teams were still defending both sides of the field, but that quarterback didn't have a strong enough arm to threaten the wide side. So anytime they're on the hash, he was going to the boundary. And that's actually pretty common in with college quarterbacks, that you target the boundary because that's an easier throw. Like, and again, he mentioned that. And that's why you put your best guy, your lockdown guy, Jalen Ramsey, at boundary corner. It's also a place where you can blitz a lot, and Ramsey has done a lot in terms of locking down the run from the boundary side. And so in a lot of ways, because of the ability to blitz the boundary side, because of the ability to shore up that edge in the run against the run, the boundary corner provides a lot of the same kind of role that the star does in this defense. It's just together with that corner responsibility. And the benefit that he gives you is that you can roll the coverage away from him at that boundary spot. So I'm not as ready to necessarily move Jalen Ramsey from that spot. The other reason, by the way, is that Ramsey, as a cover guy, is actually better equipped to be a boundary guy than he is to cover out of the slot. There were a couple times last year where he got turned around because, listen, he's a long, high-waisted guy. He's not a guy, he's got long legs. He's not a guy who's going to be turning on a dime. He's not LaMarcus Joyner. He's not, if you look on, at the current roster, Marquez White is smoother in his ability to turn and run and do some of those things than Jalen. And in terms of the short area quickness and some of the things that you have to do in defending slot receivers, Jalen's actually not necessarily the best cover guy on the Florida State team in that mode. He's the best overall cover guy, and he's certainly the best defensive player on this team. But if you're asking a guy to make short, sudden movements and not get turned around, Jalen's actually not the best equipped for that. And that's where it gets a little bit complicated, because then you've got to start looking at some other options. Now, Fisher mentioned that they may, in certain scenarios, move Jalen back inside. And I think that tips their hand a little bit on how they're thinking about this. I think what they're going to do, and this is actually what I would do, is they're going to match personnel much more based on matchups, based on what their concerns are with a team. So against Georgia Tech, we're going to still see Jalen Ramsey at the boundary the whole time, because they can put a Derwin James or somebody like that at the star and get the same kind of physical presence that they want at that star position without having to sacrifice what they've got at the boundary. But in certain other cases, they may move Jalen Ramsey to that star position against a certain team or a certain personnel grouping and put McFadden probably at the field corner, and then move Marquez White over to the boundary. Again, you put your stronger cover guy generally at that boundary, although, you know, usually you want your bigger guy there too. So that could be interesting to see what they actually choose to do, and would show a little bit of how much they think of McFadden at this point. But that's a possibility that you see a move made there. In certain cases, I also think Marcus Lewis is one of the keys here. Marcus Lewis is a guy I said in preseason, this is before he got hurt, I thought he would play and play a lot this year. He came in with a college ready body, and he's a football smart guy. And I think we may see a lot more Marcus Lewis in that star position, particularly against teams that are going to put a faster, quicker guy in the slot. And I think the real concern here is you've got to be ready for Clemson to come along with Artavis Scott, who is ridiculously fast and very quick in that slot. You don't want him matched up with Tyler Hunter just because of the speed issue. But Marcus Lewis may have the ability to at least stay with him a little bit. And what they are going to have to do, and this is something you can do easier with the slot corner than you can with the boundary, is keep safety protection over the top. And I think that's going to mean just rolling coverage a little bit more away from Jalen Ramsey when he's at that boundary. I think that's what we're going to see a little bit more in this case. But and you'll see some Javion Elliott as well. But again, he's 5'11", 176. You know, you're giving up some stuff with him on the field as well. So, you know, I think that's definitely a concern coming in, but coming into this part of the year. But I do think we're going to see some moving around. We're going to see, depending on what personnel is on the field, depending on what they've shown so far, we might see Ramsey move inside. We might see Lewis on the field. We might see McFadden on the field. We might see Derwin James at the star, depending on what's happening. I think it's just going to be very situational. And they've done a good job with that on the defensive line and at the linebacker position in terms of situational stuff up until they didn't have any linebackers to rotate, but in terms of situational stuff all year. So I think that's where the defense is going to head moving forward. And, of course, with Marshall out, with Nate Andrews currently out, the priority has to be to get some of these young guys enough reps and time so that they're ready for the Clemson game. Because you've got to have some guys that can match up against those Clemson wide receivers, because Clemson will do exactly what Louisville and Miami did, putting a guy like Artavis Scott and trying to get him against the weakest coverage player in that secondary and create an advantageous matchup for the offense. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. I don't know that we're going to see a whole lot of what's going to happen this week against Georgia Tech, because they just don't present the same issues. I think more than likely going to see Derwin James in that kind of role, because you want him around the box and because he's so physical on the edge. But it's going to be interesting to see moving forward. I mean, even in this episode, you've heard me and Bryant McFadden with slightly different opinions on what the best course of action is going forward. And I don't know that you could necessarily, without being in practice and seeing what's happening in terms of some of the young guys on a rep-by-rep basis, know which one of us is actually right on this. Now, of course, we're unified. We both are completely agreed in terms of why older players are playing, have played up to this point, and what the freshmen need to do to be ready. But it's going to be interesting, again, to see what options are chosen moving forward and how Florida State avoids being put into some of those difficult situations that they've seen against Miami and against Louisville, two teams that had a little bit more depth at wide receiver than you're going to see from anybody on this schedule, except for really Clemson, who can go four wide and cause some of those same problems. And that's really where all this is leading up to. I mean, that's the game that provided Florida State takes care of business the next couple of weeks. That's really the game that's going to determine the season here. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also follow Bryant McFadden at BMAC_120. Again, thank you to BMAC for joining us today and providing outstanding insight from a guy who could be coaching a secondary himself right now. Definitely go ahead and catch what he's doing. You can also follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And be sure to catch us for our next podcast, which will cover the key matchups that are going to determine the outcome of the Georgia Tech game. So this is going to be one you will not want to miss. Going to be covering a lot about option football and what Florida State's going to need to do. I'm also going to have a couple things coming up on Noel Digest on that with some video clips and so on. Don't miss it. But for now, thanks for joining us. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.